The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have the author Will Schwalbe, and he's got a brand new book, his second book that he's written alone. He's also written one with another author. We'll find out about that book, about the author. But first, we're going to talk about Books for Living by Will Schwalbe. Will, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
This is a book of books, isn't it?
It's a book about books, and it's really a book about the way that books help us find meaning in our life, the way they tell us what to do in life, and the way they also help us understand our life. So it's about 26 different books, all of which have come to me at a time in my life when I really need them. But it's also stories from my life about that miraculous way that books and real life just seem to come together and power our lives.
You know, when I said a book about books, I almost think of Seinfeld, where that was a show about nothing, but Books for a Living, a book about books, is about something.
Well, I would say a book about books is a book about everything, because I really believe that every single thing that you need to know, you can find in a book. And the challenge is finding the right book at the right time. And that's really what I'm trying to help people do with Books for Living, is by showing some of the books that found me at the right time, giving people what I hope will be for them the book they need when they need it most.
You know, well, I was a little under the weather when I started reading this. Now, I'm not contagious, so you don't have to back
good,
up.
Glad to know that.
But you know, I was reading this, and when I'm sick, I usually try to work out of it, and I push through it and everything. And the very first book that you had that you talked about here, it was like maybe you were on my shoulder speaking to me, and I was reading this, and it's like, you know what? You can take the time and relax, because the very first book you talk about in Books for Living pretty much says that.
It does. It does. It's a wonderful book. It's called The Importance of Living, and the author, Lin Yu Tang. And this was a book that in 1938 was one of the biggest bestsellers in the world. It was a massive global bestseller. Lin Yu Tang was a Chinese scholar. He had met Pearl Buck, the wonderful American author, Nobel Prize winner, author of The Good Earth, and they had met in China. She and her husband was a publisher, brought Lin Yu Tang to America, and he wrote in quick succession two books that were enormous bestsellers. The first was a book explaining China to the West, and the next was this book, The Importance of Living. And the way Lin describes it, he calls it a book about the noble art of leaving things undone. And it's about the need to relax, to take naps, to enjoy tea and meals, to spend time with your friends, and to read. It's a very charming book. It's very thick. It's about 500, 600 pages. It's got a lot of Chinese philosophy in it, a lot of digressions. But it's got this wonderful message that, as Lin puts it, we really should not live to work. We should work to live.
And you know, that's almost like health books that I read. You should eat to live, not live to eat also. So well, it's almost like the same message.
Yeah, it's a wonderful message, and it's a great message for our time. And Lin Yu Tang was incredibly prescient. So here he was with his book published in 1938. And one of my favorite images is he talks about going to the most famous tea house in China. And he said tourists come from all over the world to go to this tea house in China. And he says they are so busy taking pictures of themselves drinking tea that they don't even enjoy the tea. And that cracks me up, because when I go to any restaurant in America now, I see everyone taking pictures of their food, and I feel like saying, it's getting cold, eat your food.
That said, there's a thing also, and I think that what he was saying was live in the moment, enjoy what you have now.
Yes, but he also was a man of very deep values. He really believed in reason. He believed in learning. He believed in responsibility. He wasn't a sort of wastrel or a sybarite. He was an incredibly accomplished man. Helped create the first major Chinese-American dictionary, was a university president. But he just felt that the values that were epitomized by, say, napping and hanging out with your friends were important values in contrast to the kind of greed and ambition that he saw all around him in the late 30s. And of course, the late 30s were the lead up to World War II, and he was writing out of first Asia, then Europe, then America. So it's a more profound book. But one of the things I really wanted to get across in Books for Living is you can find wisdom in any kind of book. And that's why I write about books like ranging from children's books like Stuart Little. I write about thrillers like The Girl on the Train. I write about things which are undeniably classics like The Odyssey, but also wonderful contemporary novels like A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. And I never want people to feel bad about what they're reading. And these are stories about the incredible wisdom that's found in all different kinds of books, whether it's Homer or a modern thriller writer.
Well, with Books for Living, a lot of these books are older books. You do have some more contemporary books in here. But is this a book for you telling people about maybe books that they may overlook?
There are many of these books that I feel have been overlooked and are wonderful books to discover or rediscover. So, for example, I talk about a book called A Voyage Around My Room, sometimes called The Journey Around My Room, which is written by a French count. It was written in 1790, and he had been caught dueling, and he was sentenced to 40 days of house arrest. And what he decided to do was write a travel book to his room. And every day he visited a new country in his room. And one day he visits his bed, and the other day he visits a wall, and the next day he visits his desk. And it is a really miraculous book about how we think we need to go to the ends of the earth to find amazing things, but they're right here in front of us. So that's the kind of book that is very unknown. But I also, there's a lot of modern classics that people have somewhat forgotten. I'm always a little sad when I meet people who don't know the incredible book Death Be Not Proud by John Gunther. And I write about that. And that's the book, of course, by the world-famous American journalist whose son, Johnny Gunther, got a brain tumor at age 17. And it's a chronicle of Johnny's illness and death. And it's, when I was growing up, everybody read it. And I think it's a book everyone should read. It's just a wonderful book about living. And also books like Gift from the Sea by Anne Morrow Lindbergh, which is a classic. But as a classic, it's a somewhat forgotten classic. So it's such a joy for me to bring people's attention to these books. But, you know, one of the things I most want to get across in this is these are 26 wonderful books. These aren't the 26 best books, and they aren't even my 26 favorite books, because I want to inspire people to seek out all sorts of wonderful books. These are examples of the way that books can enhance your life.
So these 26 books in Books for Living are things that really inspired your life, but you're saying there are other books out there that you should examine also.
Yes, I want to inspire people to do what I did for themselves. I'd love for them to read the books that I suggest because I think they're wonderful books, but I want them to look at the books of their lives in a similar way and to tell stories and think about their lives in terms of the books that touch them. One of the things I write about in this, I have a chapter about a wonderful classics teacher, Latin teacher I had when I was in high school, and a chapter about a school librarian who introduced me to Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin. And I have chapters about wonderful friends of mine who died and the books I associate in my mind with them. And I think I quote the famous quote, "The unexamined life is not worth living." And that's Socrates, as quoted by Plato. And I believe that. And I also believe that books are the best way we have to examine our life. And by comparing our experiences to the experience of characters or authors, and by thinking about people in our lives in terms of the books they introduced us to, we can really live a more meaningful life. So my book is an attempt to direct people towards these, but I really want to show people the kind of joy I've experienced from looking at books in life this way and encourage them to do the same.
I know the one friend that passed away, I believe it was the book Odyssey that you talked about. And you just never know how lonely sometimes people can be. I don't want to give too much away, but going to his funeral, not too many people went, but it seemed like he had a large circle of friends and acquaintances.
Yeah, that's a chapter that's very meaningful to me. And it's the story of a friend who came to New York, emigrated there, had a wonderful, rich life. We met him. He gave these epic parties where hundreds of people would come, and everyone had funny stories from them. And as time happens, we fell a little, not out of touch, but we'd see each other a couple times a year. And I would keep in touch a lot on Facebook with him. And his Facebook life, he was living an incredible life, and everything was continuing, and everything was wonderful, and the parties and the meals. But what I didn't know was how terribly lonely he was, and that eventually he was really in the course of drinking himself to death. And I tell the story of when he died, and that's the story you're referring to. I almost didn't go to the funeral. I thought, I had weekend plans. I thought there'll be hundreds of people at the funeral. Nobody will notice whether I'm there. And at the last minute, and I'm so glad, I thought, no, he was a dear friend of mine. I got to cancel my weekend plans. Got to be there. And there were fewer than 20 people. And one of the things that I think is so pernicious about social media, and I love it. I'm on Facebook a lot. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. But it's a way to sometimes of masking loneliness. And it's more important than ever that we reach out to the people we love and the people in our lives, and we reach out IRL in real life.
Well, I know that you've written for other magazines, top-notch magazines. I know that you've also been in publishing also. With books for a living, how long does it take a book to actually go into public domain? And books that you have in here, can other people grab those, remake them, and make new books?
Most of the books I wrote about in here are not in the public domain. Something like David Copperfield by Charles Dickens is at this point. But most everything, even books stretching back a fair bit, and even a book like the wonderful French Count written in 1790, obviously that's in the public domain, but the translation is a fairly recent one. So I had to apply for permission to all the publishers and writers and translators for the right to quote. And I quote quite extensively in the books. There are, of course, so many wonderful books in the public domain. And there's a phenomenon I talk about at the beginning of this, and I really encourage people with this too. People used to keep what they called commonplace books. And a commonplace book was simply a blank book where you would write down sentences, quotes, lines from poetry, lines from songs that spoke to you. Not for publication, so you don't have to worry about permission, just as something to remind you of your own thoughts and values. And to some extent, too, Books for a Living is a kind of a commonplace book where I've assembled some quotes that I think really speak not just to me, but I hope speak to everybody. But again, you don't need anyone's permission to do this. And I would encourage people to do it in a physical book. Don't do it online, but buy a really lovely notebook in your stationery store. Get a nice pen and copy quotes that speak to you. Because in the act of copying them, you internalize them.
It's almost a lost art anymore, though.
It really is something of a lost art. And it used to be a habit that everyone did. Everyone had a commonplace book.
You know, the last book that you wrote was titled The End of Your Life Book Club. Tell me a little bit about that. Give me a feeling for that book, would you?
Well, The End of Your Life Book Club was a book I wrote about my mother and about the books we read when she was dying. My mother, at age 73, was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, which is a very rough diagnosis. And very typically, people might only live 3 to 6 months with that. But my family was very lucky, and my mother lived for 2 years. And during that time, all the members of the family, my sister, brother, father, myself, would take her to various appointments, accompany her to chemo. And I very frequently went with her to chemo. And we started talking about books. Something we'd done all our life. What are you reading? She'd ask me. What are you reading? I'd ask her. And very soon I realized that we'd formed something of a peculiar two-person book club, a mother and a son sharing books. And a couple months before she died, I said to her, you know, I want to write a book about the books we've read, what we've learned, and what I've learned from you. Because she was also had a, quite a remarkable life as an educator and then as a refugee advocate who had traveled all over the world helping refugees. So it's the story of the books, it's the story of her, and it's also the story of the one last thing she wanted to do, which was help an amazing woman she'd met, Nancy Hatch Dupree, build a library and cultural center in Kabul. And the book, I like to say, has a miracle at the end. And the miracle is that working the phones from chemo, my mother was able to raise $1 million to break ground. And the real miracle is that a couple of days after her death, the U.S. and other governments came in with the rest of the money. And there is now the most gorgeous library and cultural center in Kabul, Afghanistan.
So the book, The End of Your Life Book Club, is that almost maybe a lesson for if you have parents alive right now to maybe find out information from them also? You know, I know that you could talk about books, but to really learn who they are?
That's exactly it. And it's a real seize the day message, because you don't have to wait till someone's sick to do this. And books are a wonderful way of doing it, to read a book together with someone. And this is why book clubs are so valuable and popular, is a great way of getting to know them. It gives you a common ground. It gives you things to discuss. It puts you on the same page, quite literally. So I would encourage anyone listening to this, doesn't have to be a parent. It can be a child. It can be a sibling. It can be a friend in another city. And just say, hey, we're going to have a book club of two. Let's choose a book to read and let's talk about it. And I think that in the course of those conversations, you can't help but get to know each other better.
Well, Books for Living, your brand new book, a total of 26 books in here.
Yes.
How did you yourself come up with these titles with all the millions of books out there?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, the number of 26 has some meaning, so I want to start with that. That is a little bit of a reading program. So if you decided to use Books for Living as a year-long reading program, you could read a book every 2 weeks, and many of them are short. A couple of them are long, but most of them are pretty short, and complete the book in that sense. But there's something quite arbitrary to the 26 books I chose. And again, I did that very much on purpose. There's a chapter on a cookbook, Edna Lewis's Great, The Taste of Country Cooking, for example, or on a children's picture book, More, 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 Said the Baby by Vera B. Williams. And by being a little bit arbitrary, I wanted to get across this point again, that I don't believe in great books lists. I don't believe there's 100 books everyone should read. I believe the book you should read is the book you want and need to read, and the one that finds you when you need it. That said, there are a lot of books that have been so important to me that I love and that spoke to me, but I wasn't sure had something for other people, or at least I couldn't explain what it was. So I did not include those. So these are 26 books that found me when I needed them, but they're 26 books that I believe have something to say to the majority of people out there.
All right. Well, you know, finding that book that you needed when you need it, how did you know which book you were going to read? How do you find that book?
That's a wonderful question, how to find the book. And there's a couple of techniques that I recommend. The first is a somewhat obvious one, which is go to people whose lives are books and ask them. I find some of my best books by asking booksellers and librarians. I love nothing more than to wander into a great independent bookstore and just pick a bookseller and say, I'm going to trust you. Choose a book for me. What do you love? And similarly with librarians. And what's wonderful too is if you get a relationship going with a bookseller or a librarian, over time, you'll find wonderful things. But the other technique, and I really advocate for it in Books for Living, is the one question we should all ask one another far more often is simply, what are you reading? We ask each other a lot of questions. Where are you going on vacation? How'd you sleep last night? Is this where the line is for the bank? But we should ask, what are you reading? And we should ask it of everyone, including strangers. And I urge listeners of this just to try it. When you're standing in line at the deli the next time, have a moment. Nice day. Yeah. Beautiful. Sunny. Just say, what are you reading? And you never know what you'll find. And that's how I found some of my favorite books.
You know, I usually see people reading books and I go up to them and ask about them, is this your favorite author? You know, what do you think of their writing? Things like that, but never really thought about just going up to them or in line or something and say, so what do you like to read?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the worst that happens, they say, oh, well, you know, I'm not reading anything or I'm not much of a reader. And then they may say, oh, that's interesting. Why'd you ask? And you can tell them about a book you're reading, and maybe that'll be a book that will intrigue them, or maybe you'll move on to other things or other conversations. No one's ever offended by that question, but it can provide remarkable results. Especially, you'll find there are people who are just desperate to tell you what they're reading and so happy that you ask them. And what is uncanny is the amount of time that someone will mention a book that you've read or read and loved. And then all of a sudden, this stranger in you, you have a bond and you have something that you have in common. And that's a wonderful thing, too. It reminds us that we can choose to have things in common. And, that transcend everything.
Yeah, and you know, it's a great pickup line also.
What are you reading?
I'll show you my book if you show me yours or something like that. I'm not for sure. But anyway, you have been in the publishing business for many years.
Yes, other than a couple starter years as a journalist, most of my adult life has been publishing.
So what is it like doing what you do for a publishing outfit?
Well, the role that I play as an editor is actually quite similar to the role I play as the author of a book like this. Because as an editor, I'm finding books that I love and recommending them in a sense to the world. And in Books for Living, I'm taking a bunch of books I love, none of which I published, and recommending them to the world. And really, if you're the kind of person who, when you read a book, you really want everyone you know to read the book, you're kind of a publishing person at heart. That's the impulse. But there's a lot of mundane stuff. I get submissions from agents. I read them. I work with the author on the manuscript. I help with the art director on the cover, the marketing plans. There's a million things to contract requests and check requests and all that stuff. So it at its heart, it's probably as tedious as anyone's job. But it's made a little more meaningful, or I should say a lot more meaningful by the fact that the thing you're working on is something that to me speaks really to the heart of our culture, which is what we read.
With what I know about publishing, I could say, Will, I've got this fantastic book. Would you read it? And you'd say, get an agent, because that's what we do nowadays. You talk to the agent, basically, and they tell you, give you a synopsis of the book. Then you kind of decide if you want to look at it or not, I guess.
Yeah, or they send it around to various publishers. Actually, what I work on mostly these days is cookbooks. I love cookbooks, and that's a real joy. And have some wonderful cookbooks out and about now. A book called Curate from a restaurant in Asheville, Katie Button. A book called The Gefilte Manifesto, a fantastic book about sort of new Jewish food and rediscovering the great Ashkenazi food and bringing it to life. And so cookbooks are a great counterpoint to my writing life. And I also feel, and again, this is a book club insight, food and books are marvelous bedfellows.
I would think maybe wine and books also.
Wine and books works too. Although I say, people sometimes say to me, I can't read as much as I'd like to because I have a glass or two of wine and I read in bed and I fall asleep. And I, simplest piece of advice, read in the morning. Drink wine at night, read in the morning. Do not read at night and drink wine in the morning. That ends unhappily. But wine at night, books in the morning.
And that's a public service announcement right here.
There you go.
There you go. Because you never know what'll happen. So what is maybe one of the most up-and-coming cooks doing cookbooks today?
That's a great question. There are so many terrific ones, but there's there's a lot of cookbook chef owner stuff, but there's a woman named Mira Soda, S-O-D-H-A, and she cooks Indian food, and she's English, but her family came from India to Uganda to England, and she, with her first book, Made in India, and her next book, Fresh India, is creating the most wonderful, vibrant food that is so easy to cook at home. So she's a very, very exciting new figure in the cooking world.
And Indian food, I mean, that's really in vogue today. I mean, it didn't used to be a few years ago, I don't think.
It's wonderful food. It's the food people really want to eat. It's aromatic and tasty, and it's mostly got bursting with vegetables and flavor, and the type of food that people serve in restaurants isn't of course, the kind of food people serve at home. And she really teaches you how to make the real food at home. It's great. But there are so many wonderful cookbook authors out there. And again, my advice would be the same as with every other kind of advice. Go to your great independent bookseller and say, what are the cookbooks that you like? What's flying off the shelves? Or what isn't anyone buying that you really think someone should buy?
How about in your own life? You like to cook?
I'm an okay cook. And that's one of the reasons I like to edit cookbooks, because trust me, if I can make the recipes in my books, anyone can make them.
Well, there you go. Books for a Living by Will Schwalbe. Now, Will, you probably have a website I'm sure people could visit.
I do indeed. It's willschwalbe.com. So that's willschwalbe.com.
All right. You know, Books for Living, Will, he gives you 26 books, and we found out maybe Will's not a numerology person, but 26 books, you could have those read in a year. They're going to give you some great advice. Will's going to let you know what kind of advice these books give him, and who knows, by reading the books from Books for a Living, they just may influence you in different ways. Will, thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Will Schwalbe, author of his brand new book, Books for a Living. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.